Good morning and welcome to live coverage of the inauguration of Laura Kelly as governor of Kansas. I'm Steve Kraske of KCUR in Kansas City.
And I'm Jim McLean of the Kansas News Service. Together for the next hour or so, we'll be bringing you commentary and coverage of today's big ceremony from the south steps of the Kansas State Capitol building in Topeka.
We'll bring you Governor Kelly's inaugural speech and swearing in, as well as interviews with former Governor Kathleen Sebelius, state lawmakers, and Burdette Loomis, the longtime political scientist at the University of Kansas.
Steve, hundreds of Kansans are gathered here at the traditional site where these inaugural gatherings always take place. Whenever a new governor is sworn into office, it's chilly, very chilly, in fact, downright cold. But still, there's a buoyant spirit in the air, as there almost always is when a new governor takes over. A lot of pomp and circumstance, bands, a big military presence. And there's also a lot on the schedule today. An interfaith service was held at 8 o'clock this morning. Dignitaries began their procession to the inaugural ceremony about 15 minutes ago. We expect the new governor, the 48th in state history, to take the oath of office around, 11:40, and her speech is set to begin about 11:45. But as always in these ceremonies, that is subject to change.
In the meantime, we have much to talk about when it comes to placing this moment in context and the challenges the state of Kansas faces as the state emerges from the 8-year governorship of Sam Brownback and Jeff Collier. Here to talk about that is Burdette Loomis, the venerable KU political scientist who, for a short time, worked in the administration of Governor Kathleen Sebelius. Bird, welcome. Thanks for taking time with us here today. You know, these inaugurations traditionally mark the end of one era and the beginning of another. Bird, tell us about this moment. Where does Kansas find itself right now?
I think this is really a stark moment of change. We've had 8 years of very conservative government. The last two elections have moved Kansas a little to the left, maybe to the center, back to where maybe it has been. And I think that Governor Kelly has great opportunities, but faces tremendous challenges from the results of the last 8 years.
And Bird, several times Governor-elect Kelly has said in the last couple of months that she's been surprised as she went through budget briefings to find out just what a challenging position the state is in right now after those 8 years. What do you think she meant by that?
Well, I think she meant that she'd been a legislator for 14 years. She's paid close attention to the state. And even after all that, I don't think she understood the hollowing out of government under the Brownback and Collier administrations. And so I do think that it poses a real challenge just to get government more or less back and running again in many ways.
What kind of leader ultimately will Laura Kelly be for Kansas, Bird? What do you expect from her?
I think she will lead the way she campaigned. I think she's low-key but very tough. And she's moved across party lines in the state Senate. I expect her to try to do that as governor. I think it will be hard. I think it will be very difficult because you've got conservative leadership in both houses. At the same time, it will test her skills. I'm kind of modestly optimistic on that front.
You said low-key and tough, right, soft-spoken, right?
Yes.
But you think she has the skill set to maneuver, much like Kathleen Sebelius did, with moderate Republicans and Democrats in the legislature, but the conservative Republicans still controlling the leadership?
Honestly, I think she's a little better suited than Kathleen was. I think Kathleen was an executive of the first order.
And Kathleen Sebelius is emerging from the Capitol,
and she wasn't. But I think Laura Kelly is essentially a legislator. That's where she has won her spurs. And my sense is that she may be better at it, the day-to-day legislation, than Kathleen.
I was going to say, Bert, a lot of people know, have come across her, encountered her. She's so soft-spoken. But I wouldn't mistake that for being weak or hesitant to pull the trigger on anything. This is a woman of who can be pretty formidable at times.
Ask Kris Kobach. I mean, seriously. I mean, I think if he took her for weak at all because she was soft-spoken, he was, you know, quickly reminded that that wasn't the case in the election.
On the other hand, Berg, she does have to really govern it in a bipartisan fashion. She does have a Republican legislature to work with. And we talked about this. I mean, does she have those skills?
Sure. I mean, if you've been in the Senate for 14 years, you've dealt with the budget for 14 years, dealt with both moderates and conservatives. Those are the skills that you have to have to get along. I think that what we have to see is will she be able to pull things together. It's not just her. It's the leadership. It's the minority party. It's everything.
You know, that last big round of applause you heard about 45 seconds ago was the introduction of Congresswoman Charisse Davids, the Democrat from the Johnson County, Wyandotte County District, Kansas's 3rd District. A lot of enthusiasm for her here today as Democrats gather for the inauguration of Laura Kelly. Bird, she faces a lot of big challenges, and I'm wondering what's the biggest one on her plate as she prepares to take over today?
Well, I actually, it's hard to say just one. Mm-hmm. She's got to deal with school financing. That's kind of teed up by the court. Certainly there's going to be a lot of pressure for Medicaid expansion. Republicans certainly want tax cuts. They want a return of the windfall, the so-called windfall. And so that balancing of more programs versus a definite desire for lower taxes, I think that's the toughest thing to begin with. Not just one thing, but try to bring three or four of these things together. Highways, you name it.
But of all those things, she has got to get school financing done, at least according to the order of the Kansas Supreme Court.
I mean, that's a good news and bad news. I mean, she's got to get it done, but she has the force of the court behind her. She probably has majorities in both chambers. The question will be, will Republican leaders in the chambers work with her to bring this key item up?
And that was going to be my question for you. What do you think their dispensation is right off the bat in terms of their attitude about working with her? They're going to want to draw somewhat of a bright line in terms of what their expectations are, but do you think off the bat they're going to be willing to kind of meet her halfway?
No. I think we'll find out where halfway or one-third or two-thirds of the way is. No, I don't think that's not the way the legislative process works. We can see that with President Trump right now. So I think they're going to have to feel each other out a little bit. Will she work with them on taxes some? Will they work with her on school finance? I think that we're going to find that out in the next 6 weeks or so.
Well, they've already drawn a bit of a line on school finance, saying they're not sure the state can afford to meet the court's order regarding that inflationary factor in increasing the financing for schools, and they might want to go back and revisit the formula itself. I mean, so they're throwing down the gauntlet pretty early on the biggest issue of the session.
That's why the Constitution gave the governor a veto. I think that that's the difference this year. She wields a veto, and they're going to have to work with her on this. We'll see what happens. You know, we haven't had much of a legislative process in Kansas except for the last 2 years. We've really had the far right do what it wanted to do. We're now going to see legislators legislate, the governor work with the legislature, and honestly, we really haven't seen that for a decade.
You know, it's interesting to me, Bird, we're going to hear from former Governor Kathleen Sebelius in just a little bit here. But what she told me in our conversation was when she took over as governor, she had just spent 8 years as Kansas Insurance Commissioner. She had been out of the legislature after having been a legislator for a while. But she was no longer as familiar with lawmakers as she once was. The advantage, she says, that Laura Kelly has is that she comes directly from the legislature and knows the leadership, knows the rank and file, and that's going to make things a little different for her.
I think there's no question of that. And plus, you have a Senate that has been in office for 2 years. So these are people that Laura, for better or for worse, has worked with over the last 2 years. And then you have, of course, a lot of new legislators coming in to the House.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Bird. Professor Lewis
My
will
pleasure.
Be sticking around with us. He'll be back later in the hour. You're listening to live coverage of the inauguration of Laura Kelly from the Kansas Capitol in Topeka, from KCUR in Kansas City, and the Kansas News Service. And we want to bring in State Representative Eileen Horn. She's a Democrat from Lawrence, and she is the Minority Policy Chair. Eileen, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Is this your first inauguration?
It is.
Well, what do you make of it? So far, it hasn't really happened yet.
exciting, freezing, all of it.
Freezing.
That it is.
I think freezing is the operative word here today, Eileen. Hey, you know, you've only been in the House for a couple of years. I'm wondering, how big a difference does it make for Democrats in the House and Senate now to have a Democratic governor?
Well, I think it's night and day, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've really, you know, obviously as Democrats struggled over the past 8 years, and I think now are breathing kind of a sigh of relief that we have an ally on the second floor and are looking forward to making progress with her.
In terms of your own enthusiasm for coming back this session, how does having a Democratic governor affect that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, last session was actually my first session, so I was completely overwhelmed, but fortunately not feeling so today.
Yeah.
Well, you know, House Democrats, I think you just completed a retreat, did you not?
We
did. In advance of the session. And you talked about priorities for this session. Give us a sense of what you came up with. What are those priorities going to look like, and how do they compare to those you think the governor will have?
Well, not surprisingly, they align really closely with the governor's priorities for the session. Some of the key issues that came up were expansion of Medicaid, increasing funding for K-12 education, reducing the state sales tax on food, and really kind of supporting and backfilling the agencies who have been underfunded and undersupported, like DCF, and restoring mental health funding in the state.
Well, you know, Republican leaders are already sending the signal that they're going to be watching the governor very carefully in terms of this agenda that you're talking about, because they think it's going to cost more than the state can afford, mm-hmm. and they're very intent on giving back the so-called federal windfall. So at the end of the day, is this agenda that the governor is going to lay out that you share with her, can it be accomplished?
Well, I mean, it remains to be seen, obviously. I don't have a crystal ball, but I do think, so to your point about revenues, there's still mm-hmm. a lot of uncertainty about revenues, right? And we're not exactly sure. There are also new sources of revenue with the sales tax on internet sales, also potential for sports betting discussion. So it's uncertain. I think we'll learn a lot more, obviously, when she releases her budget on Thursday.
You know, Republicans have indicated that they may want to start all over again with an entirely new spending formula, Representative Horn. What do you think about that?
You know, we did so much work on this last session and over the past several years, and I think going backwards would be a colossal waste of time. There was a lot of good work done last session. We added $525 million in funding to K-12 education, and I think going back and trying to rewrite it would just be a huge waste of time.
In theory, dealing with school finance should take you half an hour, right? Because you got the groundwork laid, the Supreme Court has signed off on it. The only X factor here is this extra inflation factor of what, roughly half a billion dollars here.
And I think I would hope that my colleagues would view it that way too, which is, let's get in there, let's comply with the courts, let's have a quick win, a quick bipartisan win, and do the right thing for schools. I don't know if they'll do that.
Another very big issue on the agenda right now is Medicaid expansion. You've already mentioned it here. To what extent do Democrats have to get that this session? How high on the list is that for you, and is it for your party?
You know, a lot of Democrats campaigned on this issue, and I don't think we need it. 150,000 Kansans need it, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to get it done for the people of the state who are without health insurance and need it.
And this fight's been going on for a very long time in this state. Do you think this might be the year?
I hope so. You know, 37 states have already expanded Medicaid. Several did so last fall by ballot initiative. I think it's a matter of time before Kansas goes, and I hope it's this session.
What do you think Governor Kelly has to do, Representative, to bring Medicaid expansion about? What needs to happen here? Because Republicans, as you know, some of them at least, aren't too eager to go there.
Yeah, I think so. She's kind of hinted about a Kansas-specific plan for Medicaid expansion, about creating a task force of legislators to build a bipartisan bill. I think we'll know a lot more at her State of the State on Wednesday.
You even hear this term revenue neutral being kicked mm-hmm. around a lot, that Medicaid expansion would not add to Kansas's bottom line costs. Is that possible?
You know, I hope so. We haven't seen the details, and I hate that I can't give you details, but we'll know a lot more Wednesday at her State of the State.
Right. You know, as we discussed, too, there is a long list of other stuff, right? I mean, one of the things that Governor-elect Kelly, one of the big points she made during the campaign was all the things that had to be put on the shelf because of the state's budget problems. Chief among those was this big highway program, put about $600 million of projects, took them off the build list and put them on the shelf. And I know there's a great deal of pressure. A lot of people are eager to see that program be put on track. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there enough money to do that in addition to everything else on the agenda?
You know, I feel for her. I mean, Governor Kelly was an amazing legislator. I think she'll be an excellent governor. But I feel like, you know, she's got her fingers in all the holes in the dam, right? And uh-huh. and is really trying to plug all of those. And so I think it remains to be seen what comes first.
The repeated rounds of applause you're hearing is coming as the introduction of dignitaries continues on the south steps of the state capitol here this morning. The Senate Majority Leader, Jim Denning from Johnson County, was just introduced, and right after him, the Senate Minority Leader, the longest-serving lawmaker in state history, Senator Anthony Hensley, a Democrat from Topeka, was introduced along with his wife. A big round of applause for them, and the procession continues here coming down the steps.
Yes. Stephen, I'm looking up the steps. I see former Governor Mike Hayden up there sitting among the dignitaries as well. And again, people are being introduced as we chat with Eileen Horn, who's a Democratic state representative from Lawrence and the chairman or the chair of the Democratic Policy Committee, just recently elected to that job, right?
Yes.
And so you're going to be tracking all these issues we've been discussing pretty closely, right?
Absolutely.
In terms of how they proceed. And as you heard Steve ask Professor Loomis a minute ago, Governor Kelly has said since being elected that she has found in her budget briefings state government to be in worse shape than she anticipated. What do you see as the evidence for that?
You know, I think when I hear from constituents and they call and there aren't enough staff to answer phone calls, there aren't enough staff to process their applications for Medicaid, I think all of us, I think Kansans are feeling it, and she's finding it in the agencies as well.
So you've seen evidence of that yourself?
Absolutely.
In terms of doing your constituent work for your the folks you represent?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've lost a lot of talented people from state government over the past couple years, and I think we're just in a rebuilding year.
And so what does that mean, you think, for expectations, to set expectations properly for this governor? I mean, she has some big plans. But as Professor Loomis said, and as I think I hear you saying, we have quite a bit of work to do just to get back kind of to ground zero.
Absolutely. We have a lot of rebuilding to do. And also, I think we need to restore Kansans' faith in our government, that it can work, that we can work together, and that we can realize this bipartisan vision that Governor Kelly has.
Steve, as we speak with Representative Horn, Jake LaTurner, the state treasurer, is now being introduced to modest applause. And as you know, he's the first Republican to declare his candidacy for that U.S. Senate seat being vacated by the venerable Pat Roberts.
He came out last week, and right on his heels is the Attorney General of Kansas, Derek Schmidt. And whether he'll enter that race for the U.S. Senate or not will be one of the big political questions of the first 6 months of 2019. He would be a formidable candidate.
Following Jake
LaTurner
down the steps and perhaps into that Senate race.
There you go.
Right,
there you go. Well, Eileen, Republicans are making it crystal clear that they don't plan to roll over for Governor Kelly in the months to come. In fact, they seem to be signaling that they're going to be challenging her at every turn. What do you anticipate here? How do Democrats plan to counter it?
Well, you know, as the minority party, we have to use some maneuvers like bringing amendments to bills on the House floor. We have to try to work things through the committees if we can. And we'll have, you know, the governor's backing, I think, on many of these initiatives. It's going to be a real challenge. But, you know, the people of Kansas have spoken that they believe in her vision and her bipartisan vision and her vision for a common sense Kansas. So I would hope that the Republican leadership would believe that and take that cue.
Lieutenant Governor-elect Lynn Rogers from Wichita just being elected. So anyway, continue.
it's an exciting time. It's easy to get distracted.
It's hard to have. They're interrupting us frequently here. It's difficult to carry on a conversation.
Aren't they cheering for us?
You would hope so, wouldn't you? That'll be the day. What drew you to public service to begin with, Eileen? What brought you here today?
You know, I've worked in nonprofits and government for a long time, believe in public service, and I have young sons that I want to see our state be a place that they want to live and work for a long time.
It's a big commitment, though, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. But it's a real pleasure. It's a real honor. Only 165 people a year get to do this job.
Yeah. Here's the big moment, Steve.
Okay, here we go. Governor Laura Kelly being introduced on the south steps of the state capitol here this morning.
And every member of the official delegation, Republicans and Democrat alike, standing on the steps, standing and applauding her in the spirit of what we hope would be bipartisanship, right?
This is her arrival, official arrival on the state scene following her election last November. She's walking down the steps right now, arm in arm, with a military escort here as she makes her way to the platform. Just about 40 or 50 feet here in front of us.
And affixed to the columns on the front of the state capitol building are the words equality, education, and opportunity. Seemingly those are the themes that Governor-elect Kelly wanted for this inauguration.
Okay. Eileen, you're in the minority party. How do you make your presence felt here? How are you going to do that?
You know, we'll obviously work through the process, work with our committee chairs, work to get bills heard, and work with the governor's office. So I'm so excited to get started and to really start to make some progress on these key issues. We have a ton of work to do, and I think we're all ready to get going.
We anticipate we're going to be hearing the national anthem here in a moment, and if we do, we're going to break and bring that to you live here as we continue our coverage of the inauguration of Laura Kelly as Kansas governor. Again, dignitaries still taking their place on the stage here. I want to thank Representative Eileen Horn, a Democrat from Lawrence, for coming over today. Thanks for taking time.
Thanks.
And
on this very, very cold morning. Thanks a bunch,
Eileen. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah. you sort of wonder how all the dignitaries, what they're doing to stay warm on this day, because it is chilly out here, to say the least. You just wonder what steps have been taken.
I think some of them are warmed by the simply the politics of the day, those who ended up on the winning side of this election, and others are just kind of, you know, braving it. You know,
yeah.
But everybody looks to be in good spirits, and there are a lot of people here, notwithstanding the cold weather, Steve. This is I don't know how many people are lined up behind us, but certainly this part of the ceremonial area is packed full.
It's an interesting moment, you know, Jim, because Republicans 8 years ago began the administration of Governor Brownback thinking they were going to control the reins of power for years and years to come.
Mm-hmm.
A virtual endless succession of Republicans. They thought they had turned the corner on very much and what that meant going forward. And that was going to be their big moment for a long time to come.
Right. I think they really did anticipate that. Then we had that 2016 election, which was a bit of a reset after all those years of Governor Sam Brownback and the fact that his tax experiment didn't really work out as planned. We saw a bit of a reset in 2016. And I think what we saw in 2018 is a continuation of that. Kris Kobach was certainly banking on the continuation of that conservative rule in Kansas, and it didn't work out for him.
Yeah, you did get a sense that Kansans had just had enough of the conservative thing. It just wasn't working, and the state bounced back to where Bob Dole had been, where Nancy Kassebaum had been for so many years, and now a different day going forward.
And make no mistake, Laura Kelly is, in fact, a Democrat, as we all know, but she's a centrist Democrat. In fact, a lot of people say that in any other state, she might well be considered a Republican. She's kind of right down the middle, which is traditionally, in terms of Kansas Democrats, the kind of Democrat that's been elected from John Carlin, Bob Docking, Kathleen Sebelius, of that ilk.
Absolutely. Well, the Master of Ceremonies, you might be able to hear her voice behind me for today's inaugural, is a fifth-generation Kansan, Sarah Smarsh. She's author of New York Times bestseller and National Book Award finalist Heartland, a memoir of working hard and being broke in the richest country on earth. As I mentioned, it was a big bestseller. Governor Kelly said she was lucky to get her here today. That's the voice you're hearing in the background as these inaugural ceremonies begin. Again, you're listening to live coverage of the inauguration of Laura Kelly as the 48th governor of the state of Kansas from the south steps of the Kansas State House. Again, dignitaries gathering here this morning. The actual swearing-in of Governor Kelly is expected to take place at about 11:45 this morning, about 20 minutes from now. We have a conversation with former Governor Kathleen Sebelius coming up in just a little bit. First, though, we're joined at our table by State Representative Russ Jennings. He's a Republican from Lakin in southwest Kansas. He's a former Commissioner of Juvenile Justice. He's a former Deputy Sheriff, and he was former Governor Mark Parkinson's director of the cabinet transition that took place in 2010. Representative, so nice to have you here. Welcome to our table.
Good morning. Thank you.
How are Republicans reacting to this transition of power from Republican rule for the past 8 years to now Democratic rule, Russ? We're going to pause for the national anthem here from the South Steps. We'll bring you Representative Jennings in just a moment. Yeah, don't go anywhere. I think the flag being brought into place here. And here we have our national anthem.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hail at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave?
national anthem being performed here as we await the swearing-in of Governor Laura Kelly here in just a few moments. And I just introduced Representative Russ Jennings from Lakin, a Republican. And I was asking you, Representative, about how Republicans are reacting to this sudden transition from Republican gubernatorial leadership to Democratic.
Well, I suppose it depends which Republicans you speak with. You know, clearly we've had 8 years of Republican control in the governor's office and within the legislature, and I'm sure there's going to be a steep learning curve for many in the legislature about the realities of having a Democrat as a governor.
You know, there seems to be a growing sense that Republican majorities in the House and Senate aren't going to give the new governor anything too easily. How do you see that dynamic shaping up, Russ?
Well, I think probably folks should look back historically. The fact of the matter is most governors tend to get what it is they want to get. And how they go about doing that work is important, but compromise will undoubtedly be a big part of what occurs over the next several years.
You know, I noticed you were just at a legislative forum in Garden City the other day when one of your colleagues, Senator John Dahl, said point blank that he expects this session to be a war. What do you think?
I think maybe that's a little overstated. I'm guessing the governor will have an opportunity to exercise her veto pen perhaps sooner than later, and everyone's going to be trying to figure out where things are going to really land. So she'll be challenged.
At the same forum, you said the divided power that we now see in Kansas government provides a greater potential for balance. How so?
Well, it absolutely does. I don't know that having exclusive power in the hands of one political party over another leads to better decision making. Good ideas come from all parts of our state, all parties in our state, and we need to be open to looking for the best decisions.
So this notion of divided government, you think Kansas state government works better in a situation like that?
I think it's going to force a greater discussion that will rely more upon fact and less upon political rhetoric.
I thought this was interesting. You also pointed out that so much of the legislature's leadership right now is from the eastern side of the state. I hadn't thought about this before. House Speaker Ron Reichman is from Olathe. Susan Wagel is the Senate president from Wichita. How does that affect the interests of western Kansas right now?
Well, I think one of the ways that it's going to show up is even the conversation around constitutional amendments on school funding. Should Western Kansas trust our friends from the East will treat us well? Should we lose the court check and balance? I'm not sure we should.
What are the big issues in Western Kansas right now?
Well, education, certainly water, agriculture generally. Some of the things that perhaps state government has less influence on, but certainly exports and tariffs are a big deal right now.
Now, Russ, we've talked on the radio any number of times about the condition of the Ogallala Aquifer, that critical water source for two-thirds of the western part of Kansas. Has that been replenished with the rains of this last year? Are the levels up? What do you see happening?
No, it hasn't. And to his credit, probably the biggest legacy Sam Brownback's going to have for this state is a 50-year water plan that really put focus on this issue. And I think our job now is to find a way to make sure we fund that, we carry it out.
Nice to see you, Representative Jennings. I hope you're staying warm this morning on this chilly day in front of the Capitol.
Nobody is, Jim.
Yeah, let's go back. Steve was asking you about that school finance. I mean, would it be fair to say that you're among the leaders of the moderate Republicans in the Kansas House?
I guess some others might say that. I just come up here and try to do my job.
All right. But how do you feel? Some of the leadership in the Republican Party has talked about going back and looking at the formula rather than simply funding the inflation factor that the court has ordered. You've said that you're against starting from scratch. Why is that?
Well, the court has approved the equity portion. That's how we distribute funds and how we tax folks to support public education. They've said that's fine. I'm not sure why you would want to undo that which they've already approved. And now incrementally, we have some funding challenges. Let's just address them straight on and turn the page on this.
Well, I was going to say, one of the reasons you might want to do that is if you think, and some Republican leaders have said that they do think, that the state can't afford that inflation factor judgment, roughly $90 million a year, $300 million over several years. I mean, do you think the state can afford that?
I think so. I think we'll find out when the governor submits a budget. We'll know what she's looking at.
You're listening to live coverage of the inauguration of Laura Kelly here at the Kansas State House. I'm Jim McLean of the Kansas News Service.
And I'm Steve Kraske of KCUR in Kansas City. Representative Jennings, so good to have you here. Thanks for taking some time and good luck this session to
you. Thank you.
I had a chance to visit with former Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius on Friday. She also was Health and Human Services Secretary under President Barack Obama. She's a close friend of Laura Kelly's. In fact, they were next-door neighbors for years. Here's our conversation. Governor, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
You know, you were one of the main forces behind convincing Laura Kelly to run for governor in the first place. Why were you so persistent, and why were you so convinced that she should make the run?
Well, I've known Laura for decades. She was my next-door neighbor mm-hmm. in the Potwin neighborhood in Topeka. We raised our kids together. I've known her since she began to build the what became a very powerful statewide organization in the Kansas Parks and Rec Association, which started really at her and nobody. So long before she got into politics in the first place, I have known Laura and admired her skills as a parent and as an organizer. And I began talking to her about politics years ago, when I left the House in 1994 to become insurance commissioner. I tried to get her to run for my seat at that point. So this wasn't a new conversation for us.
Mm-hmm. You know, the story is that she was reluctant to run for governor, that it took some arm twisting to get her to make the race. How true is that?
Well, I would say that she was talked to by lots of people early on and made it very clear that she was very happy in the legislature. She felt she played an important role as the key budget leader for the Democrats in the Senate, that she had expertise that she could use well, and that she was making a contribution but didn't really have a great need to take on a different office or run at a different level. I think over the course of the conversations that took place, what she began to understand, and people felt, and I certainly was one of them, that for lots of reasons, it was a good opportunity to have a woman candidate. There were no women running for governor, Republican or Democratic, that she had the kind of expertise that really none of the other candidates had, which was one of the things that she was she liked and knew about. But having a budget expert at this particular time was going to be really critical to the kinds of voters who were much more interested in getting things done in Kansas than in party politics. And that, you know, she had some unique, I think, you know, one of the things that a candidate always has to answer for themselves is why me and why now? Mm-hmm. And initially that wasn't terribly clear, but to her, but I think as the race began to develop and she looked at the other candidates, she realized that she really had some very unique talents and expertise that nobody else had, and that the opportunity to, you know, elect her was different than just the opportunity to elect a generic Democrat.
You know, when you were governor, you faced strenuous opposition from Republicans during your tenure. Would you expect governor to face the same thing, and how do you deal with that?
Well, I was thinking, Steve, you know, about 2003 when I was sworn in the first time. And the scenario is kind of similar. There was a Republican president. The Kansas delegation in Washington looks very similar to the delegation now, where Republicans had every seat but the third congressional seat. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't going to be a lot of help at the national level. And then in Kansas, both the House and the Senate were overwhelmingly Republican. But I think Laura brings this familiarity, mm-hmm. which is she's used to being a minority member of the legislature. She's used to navigating complicated issues and figuring out how to you know, to use a football analogy, move the ball forward, go down the field. She's been doing that since she was elected in 2004. So this is not unknown territory to her. She's coming in right out of the state Senate, knowing not just the process, but the individual. So I think she is well prepared to, you know, figure out how it is that budgets get passed, that schools get funded, that she moves forward.
I gather she'll have you as a sounding board for the next 4 years.
I am happy to do whatever I can to make her successful. I promised her if she would run, I was in all the way. She will be her own person. There's no question about it, and she is well equipped to do that. But I think it's always helpful to bounce ideas off folks, and as much as she wants to do that, I will stay out of the details because I think she needs to have her own operation. But we've been good friends for a long time. We have holidays together. As I say, I know her kids well. I was able to even talk to her about details about the house that I know very well.
So, right.
On all kinds of fronts, I think we'll stay in close touch.
That's former Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius, the Health and Human Services Secretary under President Barack Obama. Governor, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Steve. I'm excited about this new chapter for Kansas.
And that was Steve Kransky's interview with former Governor Kathleen Sebelius. That interview was recorded on Friday. Of course, Kathleen Sebelius helped talk Laura Kelly into running for governor. I'm Jim McLean of the Kansas News Service. We're here for the inauguration of new Kansas Governor Laura Kelly, and she's expected to take the oath of office in just a few minutes. Other statewide officials have begun taking their oaths in recent minutes, among them Kansas State Board of Education. They were sworn in as a group. The Kansas Court of Appeals also sworn in as a group. Commissioner of Insurance, former State Senator Vicki Schmidt, a Republican from Topeka. And also State Treasurer Jake LaTurner, a Republican who has announced his intention to run for the U.S. Senate. Steve, if I'm not mistaken, I think that's Jake LaTurner up there right now.
I think that's right.
Okay. And Attorney General Derek Schmidt, widely viewed as another possible Senate candidate himself, is yet to take the oath, but that will happen in a minute or two, along with Secretary of State Scott Schwab, a former Johnson County legislator who now will take over for Chris Kobach in that job. He's a former state lawmaker and, of course, a Republican. Lieutenant Governor Lynn Rogers, a former state senator from Wichita, will also be inaugurated before Laura Kelly, and we're expecting that here in just a few minutes.
Okay, KU political scientist Burdette Loomis is back with us here, and let's turn, Bird, to two men who are very much below the radar today, but who are significant figures nonetheless. I'm talking about incoming Lieutenant Governor Lynn Rogers. Jim just mentioned him, and soon-to-be first gentleman, Dr. Ted Doughty. Fill us in here. Who are these men? And let's begin with Lieutenant Governor Lynn Rogers, Bird.
Well, state senator from Wichita, very moderate guy. Pretty much one of her emissaries to Western Kansas strikes me during the campaign, although he was all over the state. Again, I think he's cut from the moderate mold that Laura Kelly is, and that they get along very well together. Certainly coming from the Senate, he's another person who can help her work with the legislature.
And Steve, prior to winning that Senate seat, Rogers served for several years on the Wichita School Board. Before that, he worked for the Farm Credit Bank of Kansas, so he was working to help farmers and ag businesses survive through some pretty tough times. And it was that experience that has led Governor Kelly to create a new position for Rogers in her administration. He'll head the new Office of Rural Prosperity.
Huh. The two were seatmates, right, Jim, mm-hmm. in the state Senate,
right,
and,
exactly.
and got to know each other in the last year or so. Is that how this relationship that's now resulted in governor and lieutenant governor came to be?
I think it was a big part of it. In fact, there's a story Amy Jeffries, one of our editors, tells that, Senator Kelly leaned over to Senator Rogers at one point and said, "What are you doing next summer?" And a partnership was born.
What about Dr. Ted Doughty, Bird, Laura Kelly's husband of 34 years? What do you know about him?
Well, first of all, I asked him a few minutes ago whether he would be the first dude. He said, no, I think that's already been copyrighted. So he's going to be the first doc. extremely nice guy, highly competent physician, highly supportive.
Sleep disorders, right? At least one part of his practice. Yeah, do I have that? Do I have that right?
I guess so. Yeah, and he, you know, wonderful family.
We're going to go to the podium here for the swearing-in of Lynn Rogers as the next lieutenant governor of Kansas. Let's go to the podium here. The chief judge of the Supreme Court, Lawton Nuss, doing the oath of office here. They're making their way right down the steps as we speak to get ready for this big moment in the lives of Dr. Lynn Rogers, who now becomes Lieutenant Governor Lynn Rogers here, the first doctor of the state of Kansas here. And here comes the oath.
Do you, Lynn Rogers, solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Kansas and faithfully discharge the duties of the office of Lieutenant Governor of the state of Kansas, so help you God?
I do.
Congratulations, Lynn.
Again, this is live coverage from KCUR and the Kansas News Service of the inauguration of Laura Kelly as governor of Kansas. And the point of today's gathering, these hundreds and maybe several thousand people here on this chilly day on the south steps, is about to take place as Laura Kelly is going to be stepping forward here to take the oath of office.
Now present Governor-elect Laura Kelly, along with Dr. Ted Doughty and their family.
Laura Kelly and her husband making their way now up to the podium, where the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Lawton Nuss, again will deliver the oath of office here. Here we go.
Please raise your right hand. Do you, Laura Kelly, solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Kansas and faithfully discharge the duties of governor of the state of Kansas, so help you God?
I do.
Congratulations, Governor.
I really do.
History being made here in Topeka as Laura Kelly takes the oath of office to become, I think, the 48th governor of the state of Kansas here. Big round of applause for her.
Everybody standing, including Republicans and Democrats, we're all united today here in the capital of Kansas, Topeka, on the south steps of the Kansas State House.
Now we'll hear her inaugural address.
I particularly want to give a shout out to those of you on the other side of the perimeter fence. Thank you so much for being here. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't be standing here now. Thank you. I also want to say a few words about our master of ceremonies, Sarah Marsh. You know, I'm a big reader, and so I'm actually a bit awestruck right now to be in her presence. You know, she is a New York Times best-selling author, and she's a finalist for the National Book Award. That's awesome. Yeah, I just finished Sarah's book about 2 weeks ago, and in it, she tells her own story, and she tells it honestly and without reservation. And it's a story shared by so many in our state. She's a fifth generation Kansan, and she's been a true inspiration to me and to so many others. But maybe most importantly, she's an inspiration to our children. Our children from every community who may be struggling, who may be facing adversity. What you've demonstrated is that hard work and grit really do make a difference, and that all children, no matter who they are or where they're from, are precious and do great things if given the opportunity. So thank you, Sarah. Thank you for sharing your story, Kansas's story, with the entire world. I'm really humbled and so proud to stand here today to lead this great state that we all love, and to begin to turn the page, and to bring about a new chapter in the inspiring story of Kansas. We gather at this unique moment in America's history as the very values that shape our foundation are being tested. The ideals that bind us are being strained, and sometimes it can feel like the forces of division are succeeding. But it is at these very moments when we're being tested the most, Kansans always shine. It's who we are. You know, when the evils of slavery came knocking on our door at the dawn of the Civil War, Kansans fought for freedom and joined the Union as a free state. When women struggled to gain the right to be recognized in our democracy, Kansas was among the first states to give us the right to vote. When fascism threatened the free world about 80 years ago, Kansas trained the fighter pilots who joined the Allied forces under the leadership of our native son, Dwight Eisenhower. Our resilience has been tried, and it is true. And while our story of progress has taken a few twists and turns, Kansas has always found its way forward. My own path to this podium was a very unlikely one. I was not born in politics, but I was born into public service. I'm the daughter of a career military officer. My parents taught me to put service and sacrifice above self, like so many of our military families do today. I lived on an Army post most of my childhood, surrounded by servicemen and women. So their sacrifices were always front and center. They were really a daily part of my growing up, and it made me even more grateful for the commitment they have to our country. Just like the families of the deployed Kansas National Guard members who are here with us today. When my dad went to Korea and left us safe in America, I saw the worry and anxiety on my mother's face, and I felt the tension in our home every day until he returned. I want you all in the military to know that I recognize your sacrifices and I'm eternally grateful. Your families will always be in my thoughts and in my actions. You see, public service is in my blood. When I graduated high school, I went to work helping kids who faced significant struggles and challenges. And since then, it's been my mission to do right by children and their families. In fact, that mission brought me here to Kansas over 3 decades ago. My husband and I chose to put down roots here because to us, Kansas represented the very best of America. The story of Kansas is one of equality and opportunity. Decent, honest people working hard for their families, vibrant cities, and proud small towns. Strong, top-notch, best there is, public schools. More than anything, we were drawn to the sense of community. Kansas is the type of place you want to raise your family, where strangers still say hello to one another, and neighbors look out for one another. And that's what we knew made Kansas so special 32 years ago, and it still does. The people of Kansas never lost track of that. But somewhere along the way, that spirit of neighbor helping neighbor that runs so strong in our communities failed to extend into this building. Public service gave way to partisanship, and the voices of Kansas families were not heard. Kansas lost its sense of self, its sense of community. We can't let that happen again. We must be bigger than that. We must be guided by the values we share. We must forge a new chapter in our story starting today. Because there's so much that connects us as Kansans. We want the same basic things. We want to know that our hard work will be respected, not just with a pat on the back, but a fair and livable wage and a chance to grow. We want to know that good health care will be there when we need it, and getting sick won't mean a second mortgage or, even worse, homelessness. We want to look forward to retirement, not fear it. And more than anything, we want our children to be happy and to be safe. We want them to see the future as whatever they want it to be, not held back by anything. To succeed at whatever they choose to pursue and be able to do it close to home. So much of that starts in our public schools. Schools are the center of our communities. Strong schools unlock the doors of opportunity in a changing economy. Strong schools ignore the circumstances a child is born into and puts that child on equal footing. A quality education is what we cherish as Kansans. And our school teachers are not just a line item on a budget. They're pillars of our communities. Yeah. Deserving of our respect and our gratitude. You know, in the words of our own Dwight Eisenhower, teachers need our active support and encouragement. They are doing one of the most necessary and exacting jobs in the land. They are developing our most precious national resource, our children, our future citizens. The next time you see a teacher, thank her, thank him, because there is no higher calling than educating our children. It is public service at its very best. We must do more to lift up those Kansans who serve and encourage more to join their ranks. We see Kansans signing up every day to serve in the military, law enforcement, and in our schools. We also see Kansans signing up to be a youth sports coach, to be a mentor, to be a leader in our faith community, to volunteer. When I worked at the Kansas Recreation and Park Association, I was always so... Yeah, let me say that again. I was always so inspired by those folks who keep up our parks and our ball fields in our small towns all across this state. They often don't get paid much, but they often work more than one job, but they are committed to making their communities better one day at a time, one baseball game at a time, one theater performance at a time. Love you guys. And this work makes such a difference in the quality of our lives in our communities. There are lots of ways to serve. And today I ask all Kansans to find new ways to give back, to do a little more to make your community a better place to live. For those of us who are elected leaders, we must not only heed that call to serve, we have a special responsibility to live by the example that Kansans set every day. We must work together in the spirit of putting the collective good ahead of any individual ambition or agenda. We must seek to lift up all Kansans, regardless of whether they look like us, think like us, worship like us, love like us, or vote like us. That's how I approached business in the state Senate. It's the message we campaigned on last year, and it will be my guiding principle as your governor. Yeah, that's what Kansans expect of us, and they have every right to demand it of us. Because when Kansans sign up to volunteer at a local school or shovel snow for an elderly neighbor, they're not doing it as a Democrat or a Republican. They're just doing what's right, doing their part to make life a little better for those around them. We need to bring back that same spirit of service and cooperation to this building. And let the insults and finger pointing give way to compromise and a handshake. We need to put down the partisan swords and lift up the values that unite us as Kansans. Because in a day and age when politics can seem so small, we must be as big as the people who sent us here. That's Kansas. It's who we are. And that's the new chapter we must write. And we'll write it together, starting today. God bless you all, and God bless this great state of Kansas.
You've just heard the inaugural address of Governor Laura Kelly. She is Kansas's 48th governor. We're joined at the table here by Burdette Loomis from the University of Kansas, Bob Beatty from Washburn University, and my colleague Jim McLean from the Kansas News Service. Bob Beatty, you just heard her address. These things typically, these inaugural addresses are sort of inspirational in theme. What did you think?
Well, it was very impressive. I'm struck by the transformation of Laura Kelly. When she first announced she was running for governor, she appeared in March of 2018 at a Democratic forum, and there was a little bit of criticism. She didn't seem passionate. She seemed a little, I hate to use the word, a little bit meek, and some of her opponents sort of jumped on this and showed a lot of energy. This is a very different Laura Kelly. We talk sometimes about the transformation of politicians, and she emerged in this speech as the governor of Kansas. It was a very confident speech, and it's probably a good harbinger of things to come, possibly in the upcoming session.
Bird?
I take a slightly different tack there. I thought that elements of it, particularly at the end, were very strong. I thought it was a workmanlike speech. I think she went through it pretty much the way she's going to be governor. She hit two things: service, very big, and then education. She talked about health, but education she came back to several times. And I think that's a hint of where she's going, at least initially, with the legislature.
Yeah, Steve, it was very much a speech, an appeal to bipartisanship for sure, but she also wants to make sure that Kansas remember what brought her to this place. She said over the last 8 years, Kansas, quote unquote, lost its sense of self, its sense of community. We can't let that happen again. We must be bigger than that. I thought that those were very important words in the speech.
Lots of applause here for this address. You know, Bob Beatty, what strikes me about the challenge that a new governor faces, she has to give this inaugural address 2 days from now. She turns around and gives her first State of the State address before a joint session of the legislature. That's not an easy task.
No, and I guess I was focusing more on the style of the speech. In terms of what she said, yes, unity is very important, but I think style's really important for her, and I think seeing this speech, I think it'll come through as well in the State of the State. This is a Republican state. Almost 52% of all voters in the midterms were Republicans, and she really can't show weakness. She has to be a strong governor, and she, in order to put those coalitions together and show some strength going right out of the bat, I would argue.
Well, this is going to bring our coverage of the inaugural ceremonies here in the south steps of the State House to a close. I want to thank Bob Beatty from Washburn University, Burdette Loomis from the University of Kansas, and my longtime colleague in the reporting ranks, Jim McLean from the Kansas News Service. Thanks for joining us
today.
You bet,
Steve. I had a great time. A bit chilly, but great.
A bit chilly. It worked out pretty well. Thanks for joining us today. Up to Date returns tomorrow.